This is an interview with Miss Jean Graham for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on Education in Youngstown at Jeannie Onco at 4011 Glenwood Avenue on Youngstown, Ohio, on May 18, 1981 at 4 o'clock p.m. Okay, Ms. Graham, can you give me a biography of yourself, a little bit about your education, your family background, where you were born?
I was born and brought up in the north side of Youngstown. I went to McKinley School, a school I later went back to teach, Page Junior High School, and Rand High School, where I graduated. And then I went to Miami University, took a two-year teaching course, which then was very popular. Teachers could go to school for 2 years, qualify for a certificate, and get a teaching position. Then I didn't work for 2 years because at that time we were in the midst of depression and there were very few jobs available. Then eventually I got a position at Cleveland School, where I taught for 20 years on the south side of Youngstown, and then later transferred back to the north side to McKinley School, where I taught for 13 years.
The school that where you went for the two-year course, what was the name of the school?
Miami University. Oxford, Ohio.
Okay, what courses did you take then?
Well, there was a history of education, there was all the classes in all the basics, spelling, reading, math, student teaching, which we did the second year. We were there for a good part of the year. All the basics in elementary education. It was more or less, I would call it now, a crash course. In education, and we had long, busy days because we had classes all day long, sometimes even on Saturday.
What, did you concentrate in one subject at all?
No, in elementary subjects. Because I was trying to get a certificate to teach elementary grades 1 through 6, and it was not unusual at that time for teachers to take this two-year course, and then they would receive a certificate to teach in the elementary grades. Then as time went on, we were told that we were to go back and finish our 2 years and get a degree, which I did.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
No, I'm an only child.
Did your mother work? Was she a teacher or your parents?
No,
teachers?
My mother and dad both came from Northern Ireland. And my mother worked in Newcastle when she first came to this country. And my dad was with the New York Central Railroad at that time.
Great. Well, what made you decide to become a teacher?
Teaching was a very good profession at that time for women. There were not the options that are open today for women in all different fields to get many different jobs. There was teaching and nursing seemed to be about the best careers for women at that time. And teachers were in demand, that is after the Depression was over, and it seemed to be a very good choice because, as I say, then we had few options.
Okay, you went to Miami, and then you went to Youngstown State. Okay, now this BS education then, did you concentrate on something then? You know, I'm trying to see the difference in the two schools for teaching for your training.
The second 2 years was a further education in elementary studies. I did not have to take student teaching over again, but for instance, we took art education, we took physical education, we took more courses in reading, we took courses in math and so forth that were advanced from what I had already had. At that time, I went during the summer, for 9 weeks during the summer, and I also went in the winter time to get my degree. So that took about 4 years or 5 years in there to get that.
You say during the Depression you didn't get a chance to
No,
work.
I was 2 years. I was in school because there were many, many teachers and not enough teaching jobs. As a matter of fact, pretty much what we're getting back to today, really, in a way. And it was very difficult to get a job. I was fortunate enough to get a chance to work as an aide in one of the debt classes, a debt-saving classes. And I was half a day at Bennett School assisting the teacher there in the deaf class and then the hard hearing, and then I was half a day at Monroe School assisting the teacher there in the sight-saving class. So I picked up an opportunity there, picked up to do some aid work, a chance to do some aid work, and then I also did some tutoring too.
Did every school in Youngstown system have classes for like the deaf?
No, it was concentrated in certain schools in Youngstown at that time, just as the EMR and the classes are concentrated in certain schools.
It would be with Bennett and
Monroe at that time.
Mm-hmm. So you started teaching then at Cleveland School. Is this your first teaching job? Well, how did you get hired? Why did you...
I applied to the Board of Education, and eventually things began to get better after the addiction was over, and I was hired then to teach at Cleveland School, and I started out with the fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And then during the years to come, later I went back to down to second grade. I taught second grade, and I taught third grade, then fourth, fifth, and sixth, so that I have taught every grade from the second through the sixth at one time or another.
Who was your favorite?
I liked the fourth and fifth really best.
Really? Any reason why?
Well, they were a little easier to cope with. As the years went on and the children in sixth grade became more and more mature, it was as if we were dealing with adults, really. Mm-hmm. Your 11 and 12-year-olds were like the 15 and 16-year-olds of an earlier age. Mm-hmm. So it was a little easier to cope with the children at a younger age.
Why do you think that they changed their kids?
Well, I think that we're living in a different world now. Television, money, plenty of money to do things. Mm-hmm. Children get to travel and see and do and absorb a great deal more than they did in earlier times. There just wasn't the money to do those things. We were confined more to home, mm-hmm. and we didn't get out to see and do a lot of the things that children do today. So that sometimes by the time they're 12, 14, they've done seen more mm-hmm. than many of us have in our lifetimes. So it's
well,
changing.
You did the Arts Holidays tours in the Arts Museum with fifth
yes,
graders, right?
Yes.
Well, do you see any difference?
Yes, there's quite a difference because I think the children are... Well, some of them are interested, but many of them, it's, well, they're inclined to be a little bored. It's just a day out of school.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's more of this idea that they want to entertain a little more today than they did in the past, and I think TV has done a lot of that for them.
When you first began teaching then at Cleveland School, now what subjects would you be teaching then?
I taught everything. I taught all subjects. Plus, I taught extra music classes also. There would be a teacher who would perhaps change a spelling class with me or something like that. We could trade off. But since I'd had some training in music and playing the piano, I did a lot of the music teaching at Cleveland School, and I also did some of that at McKinley School, too.
Did you put on, not plays, but
yes.
recitals or
yes.
things like
we
that?
Yes, we put on programs every year. And the last few years, I taught at Cleveland. We had a lovely Christmas program that we put on each year to see who were allowed to use religious programs in the school. And we had a Christmas program that was centered around the second chapter of Luke, the Bible story. Then since there were many Jewish children in school, we also did the Hanukkah program with the menorah and the complete story of Hanukkah. So we did both, and it was very well received in the community, very well liked here.
Where is Cleveland School? Where is it located in Youngstown?
Cleveland School is right down here on Prince Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, would it be an ethnic neighborhood? What
at that time it was.
Did it have any effect on the school? I mean, having the different nationalities?
No, I thought it was a decided asset to the school because there were children from all different groups. As I said, there were quite a few Jewish children at that time. We had all different nationality groups represented. And therefore, at Christmas time, we concentrated on carols from many different countries. And I thought that it seemed to work out very well.
Was there any language problem?
No, not at that time there wasn't. We were getting so many children from Puerto Rico and various places as they are today.
Mm-hmm. Going back to what you were talking about religion in schools,
mm-hmm.
when you taught, did you start ever with religion? What place
yes.
did religion have?
Very much so. In fact, I read every day from Edgar story of the Bible. I read it, of course, I didn't try to interpret it since I had many religious backgrounds, but every day I read it and the children loved it. In fact, if there would be a day that perhaps unwittingly I'd forget it, I would hear about it,
really?
But you didn't read the Bible story today.
Really?
They loved it. Then when I went to McKinley School, my Edgar Meyer story of the Bible book was rather depleted. It was getting in bad shape,
mm-hmm.
and I hadn't gotten around to buying a new one at that time. So one Christmas, the children in class went together, collected money, and bought me my Edgar Meyer story of the Bible
uh-huh.
book, a new book, which I still have, and of course I was only permitted to read it then for about a year. After that, the Supreme Court ruling came in, and
yeah.
I could no longer read the Bible stories.
Do you remember what one of their favorite stories was in the Bible? Did they have any that they liked the best?
Well, they liked the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Of course, they always enjoyed that.
Uh-huh.
Then they liked the Newton stories. And then the Passover season, if there were any children in my class, of course, we always concentrated heavily on the Jewish children. We also concentrated heavily on the Passover and went through that along with the Easter stories because they would parallel,
right.
usually, at Lent. so we go into both of those employees. They like the New Testament stories very much, and of course they all love the Christmas story. They dearly love that.
Do you remember some of the teachers were that you taught with at Cleveland School?
Yes. Let's see, many of them are gone. One of my favorite people was Miss Janet Robertson, later Mrs. Hoffman, who passed away here about 3 years ago. She lived over here in Midlothian, and after I moved here, I went to see her many times.
Then what did they teach, do you remember?
Pardon?
What did they teach?
She was the principal. She was there for many years. Then there was Miss Ida Bell Hood, who was still living in Girard, who also taught there. Another very kind teacher I taught with is Miss Joan Cleary, and she's still teaching over there.
Oh, really?
Then there was Miss Ann and Sally Davis, whom I see quite often, and I taught with Miss Sally Davis there.
How many students would you have in a class, do you remember?
30, 35. Okay. Usually never before below 30.
It was that good. Unusual?
Yeah. No, that was usual. That was usual to have a large class like that. As a matter of fact, as the years went on, Cleveland School got so crowded that they had to have about two or three classes up at Princeton. Princeton at that time was not full. Princeton Junior High School was not full. So they had some of the sixth grade class up at Princeton because they could not accommodate all of them here. The enrollment was so heavy.
Do you remember how many of them would be together?
Probably 800 or 900 children at that time.
I'm just going to give you a real easy question. I want you to pretend that you're teaching. And I want, like, when you would start, the time of day you would start, your first class would be, do you remember that?
Like
a typical day, what would it be like?
Well, let's see, we started at 8:30 in the morning. The first 15 minutes would be involved with getting children settled and get the money collected. Because, of course, they had a cafeteria, a lunchroom at Cleveland School in later years. And we were involved with getting that taken care of and getting the lunch money taken care of.
How much would that be?
I think they'd pay 20 or 25 cents perhaps for lunch then. I don't recall exactly. Then I might mention here further, too, that we also had lunch due once every 2 or 3 weeks also.
Oh, really? What did that entail?
That meant you had half an hour for lunch, then the other half hour to watch children. You either took them out in the playground if it was a good day, or you took care of them inside. Today, now, of course, they have lunch aids. They take care of children, but we're involved with lunch duty, too, and we'd have that every so often. Then, by 8:45, I'd be ready for the Bible story. Then, by 9 o'clock, we would be ready to start our classes. Now, in the first year or two at Cleveland School, we exchange classes. I had music, somebody else had reading, someone else, and so forth. Well, that didn't go on too long. After that, we had the confined classroom where you taught everything. Well, then you went into your projects where you had an hour for reading, so long for math, then there would be recess, and then that would go on up until 4:40 to 12 or 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be lunch hour at that time. Of course, many of the children who lived in the neighborhood didn't help for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Few stayed unless they had to. And not too many mothers at that time, of course, were working as they are today. Then 1 o'clock convened, and you went on with your afternoon schedule. Usually right after lunch, I would have reading class from maybe 1 to 2. Then you go on with your music or whatever else that you could work in, and then school was out at 3:15 or 3:30.
They had school buses then that would take the kids back and forth? Or?
They did have school buses in later years that would take the children out here to Shelby Road and Hopkins Road because we had children from that area, Canfield Road at that time, and it was quite a distance for them to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So the buses would take those children because our area expanded as the time went on, so that we weren't confined just area, but on out here too.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in grade school, we had the reading classes, and they divided the groups.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you did it?
That's right. We had a top group and a medium group and a slower group. And then we tried to work each group in on the level in which they could read or in which they needed help.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes your top students could help some of the slower students to help them to get along. So it was quite a task to get everybody involved and get everything taken care of. Then later we were to have grouping, where you would have a top class or a middle group or a slower group. And of course that in some ways was better because you could concentrate a little bit more on the children if you had a slow group rather than to have all three. Well, this was torn one way or another. Some thought this was good and some thought it was better, and some was kind of tossed around to decide which was the best.
Do you remember the books, the textbooks that they used?
I can't recall too many of them. No, really can't. I can remember one that was used in the primary grades. It was Fun with Dick and Jane.
Uh-huh.
And that's an oldie, I know.
But
I can't remember any of the others we used. It's been so long ago. And we had quite a variety. You know, we'd use one set and finish that up and then get into something else that we would maybe do worked with sets or more in a year, depending on the ability of the class.
Did the kids enjoy reading? The reason why I asked that is that, like nowadays, there's so much concern about literacy and reading and writing. Now, did you notice this?
Yes, they probably enjoyed reading more than they do today. Because a lot of people, I find, do not read today. Adults don't read. There's too many other things, TV and other things to do. And most of them would read, and they would enjoy the library books they would bring in for them. And a lot of them are very avid readers, especially if they were good. I think more so today. Mm-hmm. People concentrated more on reading than they do now.
Do you remember any of the popular library books that the kids liked during that time?
Black Beauty was always a favorite. For a while, of course, we had Little Black Sambo, but for obvious reasons, we weren't allowed to use that anymore. The little engine that could. And being in the New York area makes me think of the Little Red Lighthouse, which is down there in New York Harbor. And then, let's see, there's the one about the ponies from Chincoteague. I visited Chincoteague a couple years ago, and I thought that was quite interesting. And I used to read to them the latter part of the day. We'd always have a time when I read a story or stories to them. Heidi was a favorite, too. Little Women series were favorites then. I enjoyed those. Stories by Animals. Beautiful Joe was another
one. Oh, I
remember
Beautiful Joe.
I still have that. Uh-huh. Animal stories were always a favorite. Very much. So,
did they ever act? Did you ever have them act them out?
Sometimes they did.
Really?
I enjoyed that.
How about music? Do you remember any of the songs that you had them sing?
Well, of course, we were quite patriotic. We did America the Beautiful, America the Star-Spangled Banner. Then a lot of folk music, especially Appalachian.
Oh.
Jimmy Crack Corn and I Don't Care. And let's see, Tropical Smokey, and some of those that children like very much. Then we would get into some religious songs too. They had some Mozart songs, and they had Haydn songs, and Handel. We introduced to our music. They were in our music books. One song I remember particularly also was in our music book, was The Mormon. The hymn that the Mormons sing is always say. I have it yet, and it's a great book here. So we introduced quite a wide variety of songs. Then usually about the first of November, I had to start my Christmas carol, because the Christmas program was quite involved. And you'd work in the carol with various chapters, various verses from the second chapter.
Who would choose the songs? Did you choose?
Usually I did, yes, and with the approval of the principal. I did the program with her, and we would get together on it and decide.
Okay, now you mentioned, who was that one principal that you mentioned that played school?
Miss Roberts, the latest sophomore.
Okay, were they the only two then in the period?
When I first started to teach, there was a Williams there. Miss Williams was there for a few years, and she passed away. And Miss Roberts has to be the principal from that time on.
How many people were in administration? Do you remember?
You mean in the office downtown?
Yeah.
Well, there was a superintendent, there was two superintendents, and there were supervisors. There was a music supervisor, an art supervisor, a speech supervisor, who would come out to give you help in various areas if you needed. Sometimes, for instance, the speech supervisor, Miss Moore, who lives over here, would have six-week classes where you'd meet a night or two a week after school, and she would stress certain ways to help children who have speech problems. Now there's a speech teacher, I think, that comes into school, a speech therapist comes in to help. So at that time, we depended on Salisbury to help a child that might have had a speech problem. And let's see, well, of course, the secretary to the superintendent, Irene Ward, who is still there. And that was about it.
Within Cleveland School?
We had just the principal and the secretary. There was no assistant at that time.
Oh, really?
No. Miss Roberts and her secretary did the work.
How about discipline problems? Who would take care of
The principal would take care of those.
Really?
Yes, and at McKinley School the same way.
Who would work at McKinley School? Do you remember the teachers?
Yes. First one I went to was Rand Becker, who's now down to the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mary Belton, who is retired, lives in Youngstown also. Mm-hmm. She was there next. Then next was Peter Satano, who has since passed away. So there were three of them that I took for him, all outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a problem or ran into something that you felt was bothering you, all you have to do was set up an appointment to confer with them after school and say, well, I'd like to talk with you. This has come up, and I think you ought to know what happened in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they would right away set a time that you could come down and talk to them and tell what the problem was.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, in turn, you would often have parents in after school with the child to discuss what had gone on, what was wrong. Then I spent many hours on the telephone. talking to parents at night, telling them what had gone on, something had happened in the school, or something I felt the child wasn't doing they should be doing, and bringing them up to date on what
was going on. Do you remember any particular instances where you had to do this, or what would be like a discipline problem that would make you react?
Well, maybe the child wouldn't, isn't putting forth enough effort, she felt, they could do much better than they're doing. Maybe there for some reason or other you felt they were turned off and you just didn't know what the home problem was. Mm-hmm. So therefore you called home to try to find out if there was a problem that perhaps you could help with, if there was something bothering the child. And as the years went on, of course, as you can readily imagine, these increased. Mm-hmm. At first you didn't have so many problems, but as the years went on you had more and more of that. Mm-hmm. And, or if I felt that scholastically they were not doing what they should, or they had got into some kind of trouble in the playground or whatever, why, I'd automatically call the parents, and many times I'd ask for conference. Mm-hmm. And mother, father would come in and we'd discuss what had gone on. And usually that straightened things out pretty well.
Were drugs ever a problem in your teaching?
No, I never knew of any problem with drugs. Mm-hmm. Later years, when I taught at McKinley, I think we did have one instance of a problem where the young boy lived near the university and was running around with university students. And I think there was some instance there of smoking pot or inhaling something, but it's the only time I ever heard of anything like that. That was not a problem then.
Were you involved at all in PTA?
Yes. I was really active in PTA. Well, we were expected to attend all the PTA meetings. In the early years, but we would often be excused the day of the PTA, maybe 2:30 or 2 in the afternoon, to attend the meeting. Mm-hmm. Then in later years, they were at night, and we were expected to attend all PTA meetings, unless we were ill, had some very good reason for not being there. So we always called meetings. The PTA members were always very kind to us. When I retired, they gave a very nice luncheon and a gift, and they were very kind and went out of their way willing to cooperate with the teachers. But our PTA meetings were usually once a month. Mm-hmm.
Did they have some kind of, like performance, or did they have the kids
sometimes,
do things?
Sometimes we were expected to put on something. Sometimes they'd bring a speaker in. Sometimes the principal of the school would give off, perhaps at the beginning of the year, at various phases. Sometimes the orchestra that would give concert.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be programs of various kinds. At that time, Mr. Anderson was teaching at Rand High School. And then he did Harding, I think, in McKinley, and maybe Hayes. And he would have so many hours a week that he would devote to each school. Then as late years went on, I think it was Mr. Bush that did it. And they would have their little training period in each school, maybe on Monday or a certain day a week, and then the children who were interested would work with their instruments.
Oh, okay.
And then they would all get together, perhaps, mm-hmm. for a program at the end of the year.
Right. Would they have to buy their own instruments, or the school provide them?
The school, they could rent them. They don't have to buy them. In some instances, they were provided.
Mm-hmm.
There were arrangements made for children who could not afford to get one, so that they could have anything to practice on.
You say they sometimes brought in a speaker. Do you recall any of the speakers any time?
Well, sometimes they'd have the local head of the PTA. For instance, Mrs. Dorothy, who lives down here in the Navy Department, she was very active in the PTA at that time. Mm-hmm. They'd bring in someone who was head of all the PTAs in the city. And sometimes it might be a state representative they bring in. In some instances, they brought the superintendent of schools in also to talk and perhaps give, ideas or things that he wanted to get across to the parents. So it would vary, meeting to meeting.
How about during political contests? Did they ever have?
That would be very rare. They didn't bring too much for that.
Did they have elections held at the school?
Yes, elections were held at both schools.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you couldn't do too much politically, really, because they weren't permitted to do that sort of thing in the school. Even when people came to vote, they had to be a certain distance away from the building to hand out their brochures.
Where would they have the voting machines?
In the and that would be twice a year, in the November and May election. Mm-hmm. They'd have them in the school gym there for the day.
Speaking of gym, what kind of phys ed courses do they have?
Well, you were pretty much on your own for phys ed. You had a teacher. Often, since sports were not my very strong point, I would often team up with another teacher,
mm-hmm.
and we would get together, and he or she would supervise for classes. Well, a good part of the year, you'd play outside
mm-hmm.
and enjoy sports. Then in the wintertime, they'd have volleyball, dodgeball, various things like that in the gym. So many times you were on your own, but lots of times you could team up with someone else
mm-hmm.
and then perhaps do their music in exchange for,
right.
We often would work out a reasonable exchange.
You've taught math then also,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You teaching when there was supposed to be the introduction of this new math?
Yes, the new math.
What did you think of that?
I really didn't think too much about it. We were obligated to use it, but frankly, I had learned with the old method, and I still think the old method was best. I think most everybody does.
Mm-hmm. Evidently, from what you've been saying, then you've had a close relationship with the other teachers. Woodwork is very supportive.
That's
then.
Right, yes. Cleveland School is very fine. McKinley School was even better because of the fact that it was a smaller school.
Mm-hmm.
There's only about two of us there.
Oh.
And we're very close. In fact, we still get together. We
mm-hmm.
have our get-togethers. And everybody was good. Everyone cooperated beautifully and got along well. And of course, the principals, I think, are to be given a lot of credit mm-hmm. for that, too. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how much money you made when you first started teaching?
When I first started, I think it was like $1,000 a year mm-hmm. that we made. And then you got your increases. Then suddenly it came to the point where those who were getting contracts were making more than you were, although you might have had 10 years in.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, they gave us a cost of living adjustment. So that brought us up to the level or beyond the level of those who were just starting.
Mm-hmm.
As years went on, of course, salaries increased, but most of it got about $1,000 a year. We're very fortunate to get that.
As a single woman teaching, was there ever any difference in, for instance, like the pay scale between you and a married man?
Well, there were a few men teachers in the elementary school. There was no difference then that I know of. Then, of course, when I started the teaching for some years afterwards, teachers were not permitted to marry.
Oh, really?
No, they were not permitted
Why
to
not?
Marry. Well, there was a ruling that they could not marry if
Both
they wanted to teach.
Male and female?
No. Female teachers were not allowed to marry because I know at Christmas time I was with friends and the one gentleman was saying, I wonder why all my teachers were nameless. And I said, well, you probably didn't realize they were permitted to marry. If they married, they had to quit strangely. That seems strange now to me.
Mm.
But you were not permitted to marry. If you married, then you went on a substitute basis or
oh,
a part-time basis, but you did not get a contract. Of course, that was to change soon, too.
Yeah.
So there was really no difference there in the salary schedule.
Do you know what the reasoning was behind it, why they'd have a woman?
The only thing I know is that they thought, well, she'd probably be raising a family, and she'd be involved with her own children, and wouldn't have time to concentrate teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then teaching was a career that was considered that it took you full-time.
24
she
hours.
Were not able to do anything else, and therefore,
yeah.
if you married that, you'd better forget about it and find to do something else because it was if you did not have enough free time to devote to students if you were interested in your home and your family. Now, of course, the thing is different.
In what way was teaching a 24-hour career for you?
Well, really, by the time you got your papers checked and got your lesson plans made for the next day or the next week, I called the parents on the phone. It took most of your time for at least 4 days a week anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you could taper off a little on weekend, but you still had extra work to do, planning, checking, and so on. So it was a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of us, without question, look forward to our vacations, and particularly summer vacation, where we have time to do what we wanted to do.
Did you have extracurricular activities also in the elementary level?
Yes, I traveled, of course, a lot at that time and was taking pictures, and I brought in slides quite often to show of my trips.
Oh.
And I had a doll collection. I brought the dolls in from time to time, too. And I believe there was, at one time or two, there was gym class after school and sports programs that
mm-hmm.
came into being bit by bit after school, too.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes those were. Then there were parents who came in to take the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, and Camp Park girls were very active. And some of them would come in after school to put that in, often the teacher helped with that too.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were some YWCA programs and that sort of thing. At one time when I was at McKinley School, we took them for swimming lessons down at the Y.
Oh, really?
And they entered that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done at like on a Monday. We would take them maybe from about 11 to 12 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go for swim instruction. Mm-hmm. That was introduced at that time. So there were a variety of things that were introduced that were very good,
mm-hmm.
that worked out very well. That was
mm-hmm.
excellent.
How about field trips? Do you remember?
We did a lot of those.
Where did you go?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to think. We often would go to visit a farm. That was always interesting.
Where at? Do you know which farm it was?
A farm out here in Canfield, I think. I'm trying to think where the Leiden farm is today. There in the Berlin Station Road, there's
mm-hmm.
a big farm road that we take children to. Sometimes we took them to Mill Creek Park on a field trip.
Oh.
Mr. Whitehouse or others would give their lecture program there.
Where'd they go in Milky Park?
Well, they would go to the old mill, and then from there he might take them a little hike. Or we might hike around in our own. Sometimes they'd bring their lunch and we'd make a day at the end of the year. Then, of course, the youth concerts, many concerts came to being that time, and they would go to that.
Where were those held?
Those were held at Stan Auditorium. Then the Butler Art Gallery. We would take a field trip down there also. So there were various places that we would go that would be of interest to the children.
Would the students have to pay for this?
Usually they paid bus fare. They would often pay
bus fare. Was it school buses or city buses?
Yes, school buses. Sometimes city buses. It varied. But they were expected to bring bus fare as possibly could for the trips.
Did you ever hear of Circus Day? The circus came to town?
I heard of Circus Day, but we were not involved in that.
Oh, really?
We did not go to the circus at my time.
Oh.
No. Something else I enjoyed doing at Christmas time with my principal's permission. When I was at McKinley School, we were very close to about nursing homes. Three retired citizens' homes, mm-hmm. Park Vista and Windsor House, were close, and so I would be children up there caroling.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We would go caroling a day or two before Christmas vacation. At Halloween time, when the children were out of all the stuff, I would take them up to visit the homes, too, so that the people could see their outfits, mm-hmm. You know, and get a lot of kick out of that. So I enjoyed that. And
did they have a school program for Halloween?
Halloween, they always dressed up in the afternoon. They came to school dressed in their costumes, and we took a long walk around several blocks. And then they would come back over for their treat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get permission to take them to Park Vista, one of the other nursing homes, so that they could walk through and the residents there could see them.
What kind of treat would they get from the school?
Usually, the PTA would furnish the treat. It would usually be ice cream and cupcakes, which they would enjoy. And they would have their treat like that at Christmas time. They would have one usually around Easter time, one at Halloween, and one at Valentine's Day.
Oh, really?
And of course, many times the teacher bought the treat. In the days when the PTA didn't take care of it, by often she would provide the treat for the children when the holiday came around. Give them a little something for a Christmas gift or whatever.
That's good.
So that worked out very well.
Was there dress codes?
Yes, there was quite a strict dress code. I can remember well. I'll get into it with the teachers first. They were not permitted to wear slacks when slacks first came out. They were out. And I remember asking my principal if I might wear slacks when we went in our Halloween parade and when I took the children caroling. By that time, the weather's getting cool, and I said, would it be all right for me to wear slacks? Did I have permission to wear slacks? And, of course, they went along with it. It was perfectly all right. Then, of course, time went on, and as you know, the dress code went to the wayside. We got into very short dresses, and then we got into very casual attire. So for quite a while, there was quite a strict dress code. The way teachers dressed was important. Frankly, I think it's still a good idea. But as time went on, of course, that couldn't be. So we just didn't pay any attention to that.
How about for students? What was the dress code?
Yes, there was a dress code for students. They're not permitted to wear slacks then either. They were quite strict about that for a while. Jeans, of course, had not come into being then. They were not popular like they are today.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not allowed to wear shorts or anything like that. Unless at the end of the year when we had our picnic, then they were allowed to.
They had a picnic then?
A picnic at the end of the year. In fact, there's a lady who still lives down here on Canfield Road that often entertained my whole class here at Cleveland School.
Oh, really?
Had a big picnic at the end of the school year.
Where would the picnic happen?
In her backyard.
Oh, do you know who she was?
Yes, Mrs. DeShande. She was and probably still is a nurse at Mercy Hospital.
How do you spell her last
name? Capital DuChanois.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your favorite class? I mean, you told me grade-wise, mm-hmm. but subject material-wise, what would it be?
I liked history quite well. I was very
really?
Fond of history, especially American history. Mm-hmm. Still I am, because I enjoy visiting the places that are mm-hmm. important in American history. And, of course, I like reading, because I've always read a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's one question I want to ask you. Mm-hmm. What were some of the places that you went that you would show your slides? Do you remember?
Yes, Mexico. Mm-hmm. My trips to Mexico, I showed the pictures of Mexico and, of course, explained about the difference in the state of living then. The standard of living in Mexico today is much better than mm-hmm. it was then. Europe, my trips to Europe, I also show the pictures of Europe mm-hmm. and explain the different countries of Spain and Portugal particularly, and then different parts of the United States
mm-hmm.
that they've enjoyed too, that I have been places that I have been. For instance, we did a play on Lincoln one time, and Lincoln's tomb in Springfield and Lincoln's birthplace at Hodgenville were all very interested at that time because we had done this play in the life of Lincoln.
Was it one of your classes that did the play?
Yes, it was one of the classes. In fact, one of the young men, men at the time who had the leading part, is now the assistant principal at his junior high school, Mr. Saul.
Oh.
So,
that's nice.
He was in.
Okay, did you go to teachers' conventions at all?
Yes, we always do the NEHEA convention every October. Then they had a big meeting in Cleveland, and it would be a Friday usually, and the trains were operating then, and there would be a special train provided for us to take this trip to Cleveland, and maybe $3 a round trip or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go to the Cleveland, to the auditorium in Cleveland and attend meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the afternoon, you had an option to attend an individual meeting. Maybe one would be a conference on reading,
mm-hmm.
maybe one would be guidance. You could pick out whatever you wanted to go to. Sometimes it was a luncheon meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go to those. Now I think those are held locally.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would often get excused from school, maybe a little early, to attend a local meeting, perhaps mm-hmm. that a supervisor had planned for us to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Then a couple of summers I had such interesting classes. One time the International, the Industrial Information Institute gave a class, and we got a chance to attend that. They paid the fee, and we got to visit various industries in the area.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the steel mills were going strong then.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to visit the sheet and tube, which I'm always glad that I had an opportunity to visit.
Mm-hmm.
The GF was going strong then, too. We even went out of town to visit an industry in Warren. I don't recall that it was Wien or one of those Packard industries we visited. So once or twice a week, we'd get a chance to visit an industry so that we could relate to students what was going on in the Mahoning Valley. Then another time, there was one that was sponsored by the state of Ohio, which we were paid to take, and it was for inner city children. And I got a chance to take that. They brought in some outstanding lecturers and educators, and that went on for about 6 weeks also, and it was very worthwhile. So often there would be summer programs where you could take a class that first was offered to us
mm-hmm.
or that you could pay that would be really quite a supplement
mm-hmm.
to your teaching. That, of course, in your traveling,
right.
too.
Student teachers, did they ever come down from the university?
Yes, I had quite a few.
How would you, mm-hmm. you know, handle that when a student teacher would come?
Well, they usually started out teaching maybe an hour a day. Then it would be 2 hours, then it would be half a day, then it would be all day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ran into a few problems there. Not that they weren't dedicated and good, but the children wouldn't listen to them. So on two or three different occasions, I had to stay in the room when the teacher was there. I could not leave. Of course, our idea was that we were told that after so long, you leave them on their own. But in many instances, I was not able to do so. They just couldn't understand why anyone else would come in. You know, it was hard for the student teacher and for the children. So we had them many, many times. We knew that usually once every other year or something, you would have a student teacher.
Uh-huh.
The ones I had were excellent. They were very, very good. Very
Do you remember anyone that you had?
One was Mary Lou Peronco, but she's married now, and I don't know her married name.
Mm-hmm.
But I had had her brother and her in school,
mm-hmm.
and she was one of the teachers. And I don't recall who I had at McKinley. I've forgotten who they were. But we knew that we'd be scheduled for that about every other year.
One thing I wanted to ask mm-hmm. you, like during the during World War II,
mm-hmm.
or even you were teaching even during Vietnam Finley School,
mm-hmm.
how did current events mm-hmm. affect your teaching and affect the students' response? Do you?
It affected things quite a bit because you would have to bring in this into your history
mm-hmm.
classes. You'd be bound to. World War II, of course, they were all concerned at that time because many fathers, of course, were overseas or involved in one way or another. And you would have to touch on that quite a bit. They would want to talk about it and tell you naturally. More so than Vietnam, I think, because there weren't as many involved. But in World War II, there were. They were all involved. In
Do you remember what some of your questions would be during World War II?
Well, of course, there was the hard part of the father being killed, your father being killed, or someone, uncle being killed. And that was extremely difficult to cope with, hard to explain. And of course, we were very patriotic at that time. We sold state savings stamps. The children had the books that they bought so many stamps, and then they would get a savings bond after the book was spoiled. The book would be filled with $18.75 worth of stamps, and you would get a $25 bond.
I see. They would buy it from the school?
They would buy the school at one day a week, one morning a week in which they sold stamps. And we would all buy them,
uh-huh.
The teachers as well as the children, and then they would accumulate the stamps and get their bonds. So we were very patriotic. One of the most difficult assignments, I suppose, we ever had was the coupon rationing during World War II. We taught for half a day for a couple of different times with the sugar rationing. And the teachers were all involved with the public in making funds for the sugar rationing. We were also involved in the shoe rationing. So we got involved very heavily with that. That meant we taught half a day, and then we'd be involved in this maybe till 5 or 6 o'clock at night and later. So that we were involved in very seriously. I can remember that at the Cleveland School. That was an important part of the program at the time, that people had to get coupons for food and various things. And so the teachers did that at that time. They were involved with the rationing.
The kids ever asked, like, about Germany? I mean, did they have concepts?
Yes.
Did they understand?
Yes. Well, the hatred, of course, was there. Mm. Naturally, you could hardly avoid that.
Mm.
As time went on, of course, we had to hit the Soviet Union heavily with the communist influence coming in. And China, had to get into that at great length, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be bound to have some current event things there that you'd have to China get involved in.
Were there any ever German students? You know, did it ever affect them? Were they harassed? Or you?
No, I don't recall ever having German students in my class at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you explain, like, communism? Not you, or how would the other teachers explain?
You'd have to explain a different way of life. It was hard to explain to children because they thought everybody was pretty much the same we did, just as it was in later years. Very hard to explain to children what the Depression was. They could not understand hamburger, 10 cents a pound, and people working 1 and 2 days a week. They couldn't, this was beyond their conception. And one thing they would have to bring or try to bring out, at that time people had the families were close together. As years went on, you look back, you realize that this was a time of great fellowship among people, although they were hard up, everything. And being in high school at the time of the Depression, I can remember that some of my fellow students would own two outfits, one to go to school and one to work. I'm lucky to have that because fathers were working such a short time, short periods of time. Well, it would be the same thing with communism. It was hard to explain. But they could understand the restriction of personal freedom, and, it's pretty difficult. I have books yet that I have here that dealt with the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I took the Industrial Institute course, we were to write a paper, and I wrote one on education in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, travel was not as strong then behind the arms as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for them to realize this.
Mm-hmm. Would you compare now or contrast your elementary education with when you were teaching? How did it differ?
My elementary education days were much more strict than they were when I started. Yes, we were much more confined. We were watched very closely, we were monitored very closely. The discipline was very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I went up to high school, the discipline was quite heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Students were quite interested in getting an education. They worked hard. They tried hard. They tried hard to get into college. They were very much involved with the school. And the teachers were involved very strongly with the students in trying to help them to get a good education.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't the outside influences that we have today. People concentrated more on their books and their studies because that was our way of life. And we knew we went to school. This is what we had to do. And of course, I think most of us were all the better for it. Because
do you remember some of your teachers that you had when you were going, well, say even at Rayen, which Rayen High School, your elementary and Rayen and a high school education. Do you remember any of the teachers?
Yes, Mr. Andrews, who was officially known as Doc Andrews, was my neighbor. And he taught Spanish at Rayen, and he was well thought of and well liked by many of his students. In fact, his daughter was a childhood friend, and I'm still in touch with her, although Mr. and Mrs. Andrews have long since passed away. At McKinley School was a Miss Hitchcock, who taught first grade. She was very dedicated. There was Mrs. Clark also, who was very good, and Miss Nair. I think all of those are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at Rayen, I'm trying to think about, there were many wonderful ones. Mr. Clark was the principal. Mr.
Okay, the last teacher's name you just mentioned.
Miss Clark, which I am. Miss Barber, who taught history. Lawrence Morrison, who was a teacher. Alan Bissell, who was a teacher. All of them were dedicated and very fine teachers. They put a lot of time and effort. And one must remember, because I was involved in singing the a cappella song with Mr. Richards, who had charge of the a cappella choir in the project. The project was the highlight, I guess, in the high school years. Really? I hope they are.
Well, then you really have an interest in music, which you
That's right, yes. Because I had taken piano lessons from the time I was 9 years old until the time I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so I often played for the Girls' Octet
mm-hmm.
and played for the opera choir,
mm-hmm.
filling whenever it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my piano playing came in handy then with my music teaching at the elementary school to help with programs and so forth.
So you went to elementary school at McKinley
mm-hmm.
and then taught.
I came back there to teach.
What changed physically in the building when you were there?
Well, the building hadn't changed too physically. It's still a very old building. They tried to keep it up to date as much as possible, but it really hadn't changed too much.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond the fact one of the basement rooms was a lunchroom. It had become a lunchroom, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There was a library put in. It was not in there in the days when I was there, because when I went to McKinley School, there was 8 grades in the school. Hayes was just in the process of being built. Then, of course, later McKinley was the fine district rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So there were more empty rooms and spaces for the library and a couple of special classes and so forth. The building was still old, as I say, but in very good shape up until they closed it about 2 years ago.
Well, but you have a library then?
We had a library, very good.
Did you work with the librarian there?
There was no librarian.
Oh,
we went in and had a certain period or periods every week when children could get books and have them in the library.
I see. Was there ever any book that was censored or that was criticized?
No. No, we had no books at that time were censored. The only one I can think of in later years, as I quoted before, was Little Black Sambo.
Mm-hmm.
And of course
right.
that was censored. Mm-hmm. The others, no, because the books then that we had, there's nothing in any of the books, really,
mm-hmm.
that there was any need to censor at that time.
Right. Unions. Were you in a teacher union?
I belonged to the Youngstown Educational Association, which we did not regard as a union. It was our educational group. And they represented us. Of course, we all felt that we should be on.
Mm-hmm.
We also belonged to the OEA and the National Education Association.
Mm-hmm.
We belonged all three because we felt that as educators, they, you know, they represented our best interests. The union didn't come in until many years later.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
approximately when did this be?
Probably about the last 4 or 5 years I taught at McKinley. And then there was an election to decide which they wanted. The union or the YEA, and the YEA won out at that point, unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of strikes my last few years of teaching, but they didn't last any longer than a week.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very short,
mm-hmm.
as they were taken care of, in short
What
order.
Was the public atmosphere, or what did you feel about the strikes?
The public was not happy with it,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have resentment, I don't think, that we had today, because there's been so many,
mm-hmm.
and it's built up over a period of years, and strikes weren't as common then as they are today in any line of work. But naturally, of course, the children were out of school, which was not very popular, and people did not want to cross picket lines to rent the building. But they were short-lived.
What were the strikes about?
To yeah,
recall?
Money. Increased salaries.
Mm-hmm. In the 1950s, the Supreme Court case Brown, mm-hmm. the Topeka Board of Education,
mm-hmm.
What effect did this have on segregation or desegregation here in Youngstown, especially like at your schools in
mm-hmm.
Cleveland and McKinley? Or did it have any?
Not too much that I can think of. We had, of course, more of my children moving into the community
mm-hmm.
than before. We had a larger black enrollment. Things worked out very well. There was really not much of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't busing, of course, at that point. But everything seemed to work out very well. In the elementary school, we had very little problem in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever any tension at all?
The only tension I can think of was the week Luther King was shot.
Oh, yeah?
And I was in school at that time. That was just before some vacation, and I was getting ready to go to New York
mm-hmm.
for a 4 or 5 day vacation. And, of course, that happened, like, maybe on a Thursday night, and we were in school on Good Friday. Then I could feel the tension, naturally,
mm-hmm.
because of the way it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then school was out for vacation after that, and when we came back, everything was fairly well back to normal again.
How about the assassinations, like of Kennedy?
Yes, that was bound to affect the
Really?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, there was the SADs involved, mm-hmm. and...
Did they realize that he was a leader, a president?
Yes, and the horror involved, because I can remember well being called out of the classroom, saying two teachers at my door, and at that time my parents were getting up in years, and they said, we have something sad to tell you, and of course I, right away, and then of course they went on to tell me, you know, that it was the assassination of the president. But that was bound to affect the children. It caused a lot of discussion and talk.
Well, you had to tell your children that.
That's right.
How did you tell them?
It was rather difficult to do so, but, finally embraced myself and took the message, because they were all horrified, just as everybody is when they hear these things today.
No, I was surprised with just recently the Pope.
Yes, even with Preston Reagan, I was working at the hospital the day it happened, and was so horrified.
So. I was at school, I was really shocked.
Oh, so was I. I just don't know what to expect next. It's really tragic. Yes, these things affect children bound to. And then we had, I remember all the churches had services at President Jack Kennedy's assassination. Everybody attended a service if they possibly could.
Mm-hmm. Nowadays, sometimes you hear about, like, within the schools, they have to have policemen or security of some sort because of drugs or knives or anything like that. Was there this type of violence at all?
No. Very, very little of that. Once in a while, we'd have a disturbed child that would be difficult to deal with. But violence, no, we didn't. We didn't have any, very little of that. We had to once time went on, that people coming into the building that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. But in the elementary school, we had very little of that.
Mm-hmm.
There was more of it, perhaps, in the junior, senior high school. I can remember the instance of one child that I had who spent some time in the detention hut. And I had gone to see him periodically while he was there. And he used to come into the building with a motorcycle jacket on, so he wanted to see me. He wanted to know how I was and how everything was going. In fact, I have even once or twice since in the hospital, his wife and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he would just walk in for a friendly visit.
Mm-hmm.
But we were alerted a time or two that we had to watch who was coming around, but we really had very little problem.
Mm-hmm. Sports-wise, in grade school, was there as much emphasis on sports as in high school?
No, not nearly as much.
Mm-hmm.
We often had brothers and sisters who were heavily involved, but I don't think the emphasis was as heavy then as it is today.
Was there ever any, the kids, grade school kids, forming like allegiances with high schools, wanting to...
Yes, naturally. Yes,
what
there
high schools
that.
Would that be?
Well, there would be South when I taught over here, and then Ran, of course, when I taught over on the north side at McKinley.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of my former students was telling me about where they got involved in taking sides on something. Cowboys and Indians or something like that in a playground, and they had a big discussion going on that, who was to belong to what group. And, well, kids will do. They got involved in this war business.
Have you seen any major changes in the educational system here in Youngstown throughout the years? I know you've hinted about the entire interview,
what I can see, and I'm not as heavily involved as I was at one time. After I retired, I went back and played for the Children's Christmas Program at McKinley School several years. And, of course, I said for the first time, I realized how much work we put into those programs, because here I'm just sitting, playing, nothing else. And with the various teachers, I can realize what a job that it was. I don't think probably there's a dedication today in teachers that there was when we were teaching. I don't mean that there aren't many dedicated teachers, but there are some, I think, that just, it's a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then with a lot of the married teachers, who again, I'm not criticizing, because I think it's fine that they do get married, but many times I can see where they're involved with their own families. They can't put the time into teaching because maybe they have two or three children and a home to keep up, and they're kept pretty busy on their own. So I think that makes quite a difference. Then, of course, we have a lot of outside things today that people are involved in that they weren't in my time. So that makes quite a difference, too.
Do you belong to any retired teachers' organizations?
Yes, I belong to local.
What do you do at these meetings?
Well, we often have speakers that bring us up to date in the state pension fund, and if we're going to get increases and the way things are operated. We vote for our representatives on the board of the state of retirement group. And sometimes we'll have musical programs. We'll have children from the schools come in, because we've had the Bellwethers from King Kitty
on
time.
Yeah, good.
And then we're always anxious to have a speaker from the state that we can ask questions to, because, of course, the retirement fund is of great interest to everybody, the TC pretty much. And that is a current interest, I think, that we have people that can tell us what's going on in Columbus. We get a brochure that's put out here by every other month, brings us up to date on what's going on with the state legislature, with the state teachers.
Do you ever meet any of your former students at my friends at the Arms Museum where you work?
I meet more than in hospital.
Oh, really?
I meet many in that hardly a week goes by that I don't run into somebody. I'll be talking to someone, who's in one area, and someone else say, didn't you used to teach school? And I often run into this, quite often at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. if you could have made any changes as in the educational system as you were teaching, do you think of any?
Yes, I think smaller classes would have been my major interest. I thought that when you get over 25 students, you really could not do as good a job as you'd like to. It really was just too hard to try to cope with individual problems when you've got a class of 35 or maybe more. Mm-hmm. At one time in second grade, about 6 weeks, they had 45 children until they got a relief teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, the little you could do it was extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. So I felt that the small class would do you could better, and perhaps more classes for disturbed children and children who had mental problems. I felt that that was too badly, that we could not always cope with them in a regular classroom situation. It was not fair to us, and it certainly wasn't fair to them. They needed special help, and sometimes they weren't getting it. So I felt that more of those classes were needed.
Here's a two-part question for you. What was the most enjoyable part about teaching, and maybe the least enjoyable?
Well, I suppose the most enjoyable part was the musical program that I put on. I enjoyed that very much. Working with the parents, many of whom I'm still friends with, pupils that still sometimes I have contact with in some individual pupils. I always enjoyed at the end of the school year when I taught here at Cleveland not having any nieces or nephews. When it came to the last few days of school, which is the last day, at that point I could get four or five children and we'd go down to Idora Park and spend the afternoon at Idora Park, and I loved that. Mm-hmm. Of course, I couldn't do it earlier because I thought I was playing favorites. Mm-hmm. But many of them still remember that.
Oh, really?
I've run across two or three who still remember how we went to Idora Park and how we went to carousels for spaghetti and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I dearly enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. So I would do that perhaps at the end of the year. These little extra things that we did for them, I think, stand out in my memory as well as theirs. Maybe taking them all down here to Canfield River, a frozen custard at that time. We always enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun for them. I suppose the hardest part was the discipline. That's the difficult part, I think, the thing to cope with. You know, it can be quite difficult, especially when you get emotionally stirred children and children that don't fit into a regular classroom. That was probably the hardest part.
Would you become a teacher again?
Oh, I don't know. That's hard to say. Now that I've worked at the hospital for 4 years, I've often thought maybe I would like to have been a nurse.
Really?
But I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Perhaps I would have done the same thing. I enjoy the hospital so much. But it might have been different if I had gone into nursing at an earlier age.
What advice would you give a new teacher?
Well, I would say that pretty much a better plan that 9.5 months of school that she's putting in, that she better not plan to do too much else.
Really?
Devote most of her time teaching. Or maybe on weekends, sure, something. But she can expect pretty much to put in 8 to 12 hour a day. I mean, extra time at school, to come early in the morning, extra time before school. Don't just rush in at 8:15 and out at 4:00 to 4:00 and think that you have done the job. Plan to spend extra time. Make a careful study of each of your pupils, their individual needs, right at the beginning of the school year. See what they need and how you can help them in various ways. And that's going to take quite a heavy scheduling. So I think that you're going to have to concentrate pretty heavily on your class and see what you can do to help. But that's probably the main thing, spending a lot of time, getting involved, and getting involved with the parents, getting the parents on your side, getting them, talking to them on the phone and telling them what's going on and asking their advice and help. And that really, I thought, did a good deal for me, because when parents know that you're willing to go out of your way to help, they usually will back you up. So I think that makes a difference, too.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you would add about education in Youngstown that I may not have thought to ask? Or
the primary of education in Youngstown is that we had an outstanding school system in Youngstown. Mm-hmm. Yes, for a great many years, the school system was, well, it was nationally known as outstandingly good, one of the best. In fact, at one time, when teachers were first coming into the high schools, they were willing to take a drop in salary in order to teach one of the Youngstown schools, Rand, for instance, which was considered an outstanding school.
Why?
Well, the education, development of education is very high. The standards were high.
Mm-hmm.
And that was considered an outstanding recommendation for you if you got a job in the school system. And many of them would wait several years before they could get into the Youngstown system. It was considered outstandingly good. I thought in the days when I talked at the Youngstown school system, it was very, very good.
I didn't realize.
The superintendents were good, and the supervisors we had were outstanding. Principals as well were dedicated and did an excellent job.
Did you mention the superintendents who they were?
Mr. Powers was one of them.
Well, if you recall later on,
yeah,
you can add well,
I can't think at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And? Mm-hmm.
I forgot to put down about my work.
Okay.